is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, and many years with the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, including in Asia. I call upon Mary's experience to comment on three dilemmas now facing the Trump administration in foreign policy, existential dilemmas. We begin in Venezuela. The fleet that is gathered off the coast of Venezuela is extremely powerful, enough to take a continent. At this instance, though, it is regarded as a demonstration of concern that the people of Venezuela are at risk from the Maduro regime that is illegitimate, that practices brutality and murder routinely, and is also part of a drug cartel, the Cartel of the Suns, that is vouchsafing the smuggling of poison into the United States and killing American citizens. That is well known. It's not debatable. What we're dealing with here is what is to be done about moving Maduro regime out of Caracas and having the legitimately elected presidency of Gonzalez from last summer installed in a way that the 9 million people said to be having fled Venezuela can return to their homes. The dilemma is what is to be done, to use the kinetic power of the fleet and the Air Force and the Marine Corps and all of the tools of the United States, or do you instead, these last days, begin a dialogue, a talk, conversation with Maduro leaving, perhaps with promises, perhaps not? There is the dilemma that the president faces right now. He made remarks the other day, offhandedly, as the president does, that he's almost made up his mind. We don't know, go or no go. Mary, this is a dilemma that can be repeated throughout history when you're certain that you have overwhelming power, but you want it to end not peacefully, but without gunfire, without explosions, because kinetic power has unpredictable nature. It turns negative right away. So how do we approach this dilemma from the Trump administration? Do we offer to talk? Is talk successful or is talk postponing the inevitable? Thank you, Mary. Good evening.
Good evening, John. Always great to be with you. The current military buildup in the Caribbean, you know, sailing the USS Gerald Ford down off the coast of Venezuela, reminds me a lot of what the president did in his first term vis-a-vis North Korea. Recall that he threatened fire and fury, and there was a demonstration of military power. All of that was a tool, a lever to get Kim Jong-un to the negotiating table, which the president did successfully, not once but twice. And in that instance, we really moved North Korea out of the critical zone into the manageable zone of foreign policy. Pyongyang returned the remains of USGIs. They stopped nuclear testing. There was, you know, open communication between Pyongyang and Washington. And I think that provides something of a blueprint for what's going on right now vis-a-vis the U.S. and Venezuela. It's the same playbook. Whether or not it ends up the same way, you know, no one knows. President Trump said just in these last days that they, meaning Maduro and his cronies, would like to talk. President Trump made no promises there, but there is a lot to talk about. Everything from, you know, threatening an invasion to getting Maduro to accept a life in exile like Syria's Assad family, or coming to some sort of better equilibrium where the Venezuelan regime, in exchange for, you know, stopping drug trafficking and ejecting the Iranians, the Chinese and the Russians from their shores, could be given some oil revenues. I mean, there are any number of combinations that could come out of talks. I think the important thing for listeners to understand is that, you know, when you see a U.S. aircraft carrier floating off the coast, you think, well, it must be war or nothing, when there are actually quite a lot of options in the middle of that. And I think that's what the United States is exploring right now, are those options in the middle.
The kick the can down the road is an opportunity sometimes, and sometimes it's stalling. In this instance, does time favor Washington in your measure or Caracas?
Well, we're such a bigger power than Venezuela that I think it favors the United States. The more drug boats that DOD blows out of the water in the Caribbean, the more scared the Maduro regime will be that we could, you know, come for him next. The president has made a show of green lighting, for instance, intelligence operations inside of Venezuela. It is a fairly well penetrated country. It's easier for us to do things there than it is in, say, China, which is such a technologically savvy surveillance state, not so in Venezuela. So I think certainly time favors the United States, not to mention the proximity to the United States. It's easy for us to move assets down there. It's much harder to move assets across the Pacific to, say, the Straits of Malacca. So lots of reasons why, not to mention just the sheer firepower that we can bring to bear, that the United States is in a far stronger position here than Venezuela is.
The front page of the New York Times, reflecting your observation, Mary, appears to state the obvious that America is the leader of the Americas, if it wants to be. Does it want to be, Mary?
I think it does. I think there's a focus on Central and South America in both Trump terms that has really not existed for many, many decades. Maybe you'd have to go back to the Kennedy era. And that's because you have people in positions of power who are very familiar with the region. I mean, just take the State Department for a start. Secretary of State / National Security Advisor Marco Rubio, son of Cuban immigrants, was chair of the rather had a prominent position in the Senate on foreign affairs, has thought a lot about the nature of the regimes in Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and elsewhere. And I think, brings an intelligent, nuanced voice to the discussions. His deputy is Chris Landau, Deputy Secretary of State. He was ambassador to Mexico in the first Trump term, speaks fluent Spanish because his father was ambassador to Mexico, also very knowledgeable about the region. You saw Chris pop up, for instance, in Bolivia last week to represent the United States in the inauguration of a very friendly pro-U.S. government there. There's a strong relationship between Washington and Buenos Aires that hasn't been there in many decades. So there's a momentum, I think, but also a fluency and a knowledge and partnerships in the region at the highest levels of Trump 2 and Trump 1 that just haven't been there in a long time. And that's helpful.
The dilemma in Europe, the Ukraine tragedy continues. The dilemma is engagement, more engagement, or reinforcing Ukraine with what would change the nature of the war, which is direct deployment of NATO troops into Ukraine. Thou shalt not pass Russia. The question of engagement is a dialogue between Washington and Moscow, but also between Brussels and Moscow. There are doubts within Brussels, both NATO and EU, about the continuation of the war fighting in Ukraine. There are loud voices, strong voices, that are talking to Moscow all the time about settling this and moving on with our lives. And this is a parochial matter. It's a dilemma that, again, coming to the State Department and the Department of Defense, what is to be done? Can Russia be forced to the table? Can Russia be enticed to the table? The record so far with the Trump administration, one, and the Trump administration, two, is that the Kremlin says one thing and then continues in its violent fashion. How do we resolve this dilemma, Mary?
Well, there are different voices in Europe that have different perspectives on what Europe's involvement should be, namely the Central and Eastern European nations that are directly threatened, the Baltic states, the Scandinavian countries that have a long history of dealing with Russian aggression, and then the kind of lavish spending, weaker, lazier nations of Western Europe, who politically also have weak leadership and don't have the neither the will nor the capacity to really spend a lot of money to build up the forces they need. And so, it comes down to Washington. And President Trump has sent a very serious person to Brussels and Matt Whitaker to represent the United States at NATO. NATO itself has a very strong leader in Mark Rutte, who is very pro-American, understands the nature of Moscow, a clear thinker. And together, they are urging the NATO members to wake up, spend more, disconnect from Moscow, and be prepared for a longer fight. I think Vladimir Putin really baited President Trump by showing up at the Alaska summit earlier this year and then completely thumbing his nose at the U.S. by doubling down on his aggression in Ukraine. I don't think that's going to play well in the White House. I think President Trump, is to the best that he can, providing the Ukrainians with the surveillance and intelligence that they need to hit Russian targets. Now the question is, how much can Europe contribute? And it'll be a constant pressure campaign. But look, I mean, it's not a sure thing that the Germanys and the Frances of the world will continue to support Ukraine. They have political winds that are changing with parties on the right that are friendly to Moscow. So I think there's a lot of urgency to really get this right and, you know, to push back Putin as much as is possible.
I note, Mary, that there are doubts in Europe about going forward with the United States as leader of NATO. There are also doubts in Washington, well-founded doubts, that Europe isn't trustworthy, as it has been heretofore in the first Cold War. Evidence of that is AfD in Germany, Berlin, which is pro-Russia, anti-NATO, anti-EU, anti-immigrant, anti-US, to generalize. And the National Rally, which is sympathetic to those positions, but is certainly not in favor of the EU or in favor of NATO as it is now construed. Do we doubt those nations? Do we doubt NATO will be with us if we talk to Putin? Or is NATO whispering in Putin's ear? Can we tell?
I don't think NATO is whispering in Putin's ear. I think the German corporate sector is whispering into Berlin's ear. I think the French are consumed with their own domestic upset. President Macron is extremely unpopular. He's probably more unpopular than the U.S. Congress is, and is just holding on to power for what reason it's unclear. He's not achieving anything. So, again, I think it ultimately comes down to American leadership. And President Trump has not abandoned Ukraine. In fact, he's turned much warmer toward Kyiv since Putin has shown him the cold shoulder. And I think if Putin continues on this track, President Trump's support for Ukraine will increase.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. We turn to one more dilemma, the People's Republic of China. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.